SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Now, where to begin?
Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit, the podcast series that is entirely dedicated to this wonderful story by J.R.R. Tolkien and the two movies that Peter Jackson is currently filming in New Zealand based on that very same story. And joining me from one of the inns of the Shire is Dave Kill. How is the ale over there?
It's fantastic, and the coffee's even better.
Oh, they've got coffee in Middle Earth now. Great.
Yes, that's right.
I'm so glad that we could do a show today. Last week I was in the United States, and so I was unable to record a show. And it looked like this week would also be a problem because you got hit with a nasty situation there with some food poisoning. What happened?
Well, just actually this whole week's been crazy for me. I drove up to Northern California last weekend to visit with the Tolkien professor while he was in town. And on Sunday while I was driving down, the clutch on my manual transmission car went out. And so I had to tow it to the mechanic.
Oh, no.
and here we are Friday and it's still not finished.
Oh my gosh! And then you went, you ate that Mexican food, or
I went out for Mexican food Wednesday night, and I was not, and it was like happy hour, and so I not only ate a lot of sort of bad Mexican food, but also had a fair amount to drink, and when I woke up Thursday morning, I think I had a bout of food poisoning because I did not feel well at all.
Oh boy, oh boy. Well, it's kind of seems to be fitting with the stories that we read in The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings with the orc food and the there's a lot of cooking and it's not everything is good. I was reading The Hobbit yesterday at the gym. Of all places, I've got a new subscription to the local gym, and when I was in the United States, I bought myself one of those new Kindles. And so I was reading the while working out. And there's this whole, you know, the whole story of Bilbo getting captured by the trolls, and then they talk about food, and then later on there's always, it seems like there's always food involved in those stories, and then I ended with the encounter, the riddle game, you know, where he's with Gollum, and I didn't remember that when Tolkien gives us the backstory of Gollum, there's a lot of food in there as well. Just all the hideous things that Gollum likes to eat, including orcs. Like, oh my gosh, that is just so wrong to eat orcs. I mean,
Gollum's not particularly discerning.
Yeah, I guess he doesn't care anymore. Anyway, but it was interesting to go back and read that. It's, and I have to say, reading it on a I've got one of those e-ink Kindles. It is different from reading it on an iPad. For some reason, I was able to much more concentrate on the story. And, you know, I was in Middle Earth on my bike, on my stationary bike. So that was kind of weird. And I think we just lost the connection with the... Oh, you're back. Sorry, there was a little hiccup there in the connection.
I'm using my iPhone because I don't have my USB microphone up here, of course.
Okay.
And I thought that the iPhone headset would get a little bit better sound than the built-in mic in my laptop.
Oh,
but
it's fine.
Whenever someone calls my phone, it pauses the Skype call.
Ah, I see what happened. Well, that's not a problem. At least we know what's going on. All right. Well, let's dive into our news about The Hobbit, because I guess that there's a lot that we need to catch up with. So let me play the jingle for the news.
You're done.
Confound it all, Samwise Gamgee! Have you been eavesdropping?
I ain't been dropping no eaves, sir, honest.
What did you hear? Speak!
Nothing important. Please, Mr. Gandalf, sir, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me in anything unnatural.
So what's been going on in Middle Earth / New Zealand? It's been a while since we did a show, so there must be some news at least.
Yeah, nothing earth-shattering, but there's some fun bits. So the first thing I wanted to toss out there, which I can't actually find anything out about it on the web so far, but I had an email this morning from the news director at Middle Earth Network, Arwen, telling me that the Road to the Shire guys were on Good Morning America this morning.
No way! Is that the group of the guys that want to go to New Zealand and want to be in the movie?
Yes.
The ones with the beautiful website and their YouTube campaign? Oh, cool. And Good Morning America, for our non-American listeners, is a popular morning show, if I'm not mistaken, right?
That's right, yep.
Is it filmed in New York, or...?
It's filmed in New York, and it's on ABC, I believe. And it airs live at 8 a.m. Eastern time. So, unfortunately, I woke up this morning at about 6:45 my time, which was 9:45 Eastern. And, of course, I had an email saying, hey, they're going to be on Good Morning America. But it had already been aired, so I missed it.
Oh, okay. So that was today, the day that we're recording this. How cool. And so what was their goal again? They want to raise money to be able to go to New Zealand?
Yep, they're trying to raise money to travel to New Zealand to try to convince Peter Jackson to put them in the movie.
Wow. I've just gone to their website. It looks like they've created a new video there. So I'm going to give them some exposure here. We're not Good Morning America, but we do have a couple of very loyal Tolkien fans listening to this show, so let's see what this movie clip tells us. Road to the Shire, what it's all about.
We are three Hobbit fans who want to have the journey of a lifetime and be cast in Peter Jackson's new movie, The Hobbit. This is our Road to the Shire. So here's our plan. The man that can make this dream happen for us is Peter Jackson. We need to get his attention and persuade him to invite us, three Hobbit fans, onto the set of the film. We'll be extras, participants, gophers, elvish squires. I mean, we'll be anything. Simple enough, right? Well, not quite. It's going to take all of us Tolkien fans all working together to get Peter's attention. So we ask you, our fellow Tolkien fans, to help us fulfill the dreams of returning to Middle-earth to be part of the filming of The Hobbit. Here's what you can do. Subscribe to our YouTube and then share our videos. You should be our friends on Facebook while you're at it. Then make sure you get on Twitter and tweet about us. Just spread the word. You know, we got to get to New Zealand somehow, so we set up a fund to help pay our way to Middle Earth. If you love what we're doing and want to throw a dollar or two our way, by all means, do it. You'll be taking part in something epic and helping us fulfill our dreams. Not to mention, we'll love you forever. Thanks for watching, fellow fans. Send us on our way.
Wow. Well, you gotta love it. They're definitely getting the attention of a lot of people. And it's kind of part of the new way in which movies seem to attract this whole fan. I mean, in the times of other franchises like Star Wars, you had a lot of Star Wars fans, but they wouldn't go to these, you know, extremes to be in a movie like this. And these guys are very clever, using Twitter, using Facebook and all the social networks to gather up support. And on their website, there's actually a list of things that they've already secured. They've found someone to donate plane tickets to them. They've already found people to lodge them. And they've had a lot of love from New Zealand, and so the only thing that now that they need to raise is a lot of money to for their expenses, and they want to make a documentary and all that. So they can still use a lot of help, but it looks to me as if they're already doing very well. And being on Good Morning America, that is certainly gonna get the attention from at least the PR people over there in New Zealand. Very cool.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with how far along they are. The fact that they've got the plane tickets and the lodging worked out already. That's excellent.
God, that's farther than we got.
Yes.
So what else is happening in New Zealand?
Peter Jackson recently did an interesting interview with the Prime Minister of New Zealand, believe
it or not. Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. So the interview was done on Radio Live New Zealand, which is it's a radio station there, and then they also have this website. So we'll post the link to the audio interview. But fortunately, the good folks at theonering.net, somebody sent them a transcript of it, so you can go read it over at theonering.net. Yeah, it's pretty weird. It's this interview with Peter Jackson by the Prime Minister of New Zealand, which goes to show you how important Peter Jackson
is. Gosh, that's incredible. I'm trying to load the audio, actually. Oh, here it is, and I think it's going to play an advertisement.
You're
first.
Listening to Radio Live. It's 23 minutes to 3 o'clock. It is the Prime Minister's Hour, and we're having a lot of fun. We've just listened to Richie McCaw. We've had Sir Richard Branson. Can it get any better than that, you ask yourself? And I say it can. We have somebody who is not just world famous in New Zealand, not just world famous in our country, but right around the planet. He is a remarkable man, and he's working with a lot of very small people at the moment. He is, of course, Sir Peter Jackson, and I'm delighted to welcome him on the show this afternoon. Sir Peter.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm very well. Tell me, how is it going with the Hobbits, my friend?
It's going good. I mean, I think this is day 94 or 5. I've sort of lost track a bit of shooting for about 250 days, so
wow,
it's a long, long shoot. But it's going good. We're doing, we've got 30 goblins on the set today and 13 dwarves and a hobbit. And it's one of those, it's a pretty slow day actually, because we've got a lot of people in very claustrophobic rubber suits. So they need to take their heads off and breathe every few minutes. So it's very, very, it's pretty slow going.
Isn't this amazing, Dave, that the president of New Zealand or the prime minister is interviewing Peter Jackson on his own radio show? I love it.
I don't know if that says more about Peter Jackson or more about the Prime Minister of New Zealand.
Well, I guess that's what I love about New Zealand. It's a huge country in terms of the entire surface, but it's still, you know, the population is just tiny and much less people living there in New Zealand than there are in the Netherlands. And so I guess that kind of brings everybody closer together. I don't know. You got to love that Kiwi accent as well. Can we listen a little bit more to the interview? Perhaps we can find some clues there. So they're filming orcs. So this could be anything. This could be Goblin Town or something like that. Sounds like 30 orcs.
Mm-hmm.
With some CGI, that could easily be 300 orcs. So yeah, who knows? Goblin Town. He's talking about kind of a confined space. These could be the underground grottos and the caves and everything from Goblin Town. Who knows?
I'm not going to go anywhere near dwarves, because the last time I did, I heard about that, got Mike Tindall in a hell of a lot of trouble in a bar in Queenstown. But let's go the goblins. Are they well behaved? Do they behave themselves?
They're kind of well behaved. I mean, we sort of have to give them air. We've got compressed air hoses, and we stick this air down their suits every now and again to give them a breath of fresh air, and then keep them going. And then, they're sort of small and mischievous and rather evil.
And how long do you keep filming for?
We're filming till the middle of next year.
Wow.
Basically, it's a long, long shoot. I have to say, it's weird because we're taking just about as long to shoot two movies of The Hobbit as we did to shoot three of The Lord of the Rings. I'm not quite sure why that is actually, but it's a long time.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it because it's more complex or it's just more detailed or?
I don't know. Everything's complex. Every day is a challenge. I mean, I guess that's the good thing about making a movie, is that you don't ever have 2 days that are the same. For instance, yesterday we spent all day in the middle of a storm. We had thunder, lightning, rain. We had dwarves walking up a rocky path on the side of a cliff. So we spent all day with dwarves being drenched in water, which is kind of fun.
Yeah,
they didn't enjoy it that much. And today we show up and we've got flames and fire and goblins. So every single day is different. So you can't relax. I mean, you sort of come to work each day and you're right in the thick of problems and difficulties and everything else, which is, it certainly makes it interesting.
Now, Dave, this sounds like he's trying to stay positive, but it feels like it's grueling and it's taking its toll on everything. I mean, this is... it's just the same amount of days that they used for the three movies and then just doing two. Sounded like an uphill battle to me.
Yeah, well, remember we were, like a few episodes ago, we were commenting that all of the wonderful work he'd done on, like, losing weight and getting into shape seemed to be going back in the other direction.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I guess it is grueling, you know? Like, it really probably wears on him, and he probably gets virtually no sleep and has no time to take care of himself. So I imagine he's a little tired.
Well, and I also think that working with the difference with the story of the Lord of the Rings is that despite that the fact that the scope of the Lord of the Rings was much bigger, and you had these massive scenes with wars going on and battles and whatnot, the actual core group of actors was relatively small. The Fellowship, you know, they're always just a few people in every scene, and then most of the big battles, where of course they require a lot of choreography, but that's probably just one intense period. But now he has to deal with an ensemble cast of 14, if Gandalf is there, 15 people, and then the other main characters that they're interacting with. I mean, if they're filming in Goblin Town, you've got the, you know, lots of speaking parts for the goblins. So that is a lot to direct and to keep track of. And then of course all these dwarves, they all have their own personalities, and so I don't know, it feels to me that despite the fact that the story might seem simpler in terms of acting, in terms of directing the actors, it must be much more challenging because you've got to, you know, keep an eye on everyone basically. So what do you think these scenes are that he describes? There's one scene where they're all miserable and they're in the rain and storm. Could this be when they're still making their way through the Misty Mountain? Because they have a lot of rain there.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're doing, I think. That's exactly the scene. That is the scene I thought of. The scene where they're climbing through the mountains. There's a really bad thunderstorm. Storm giants or the mountain giants are tossing boulders at them.
Yes.
And then they take shelter in the cave, which the goblins capture them.
And they don't realize that entrance to the cave is actually the entrance to Goblin Town. They're sitting right on the front porch there, and I chuckled when I read that because of course I'm a longtime player of Lord of the Rings Online, so I immediately visualized those locations in the game, and one of the surprising things is in the game itself. In Lord of the Rings Online, the Misty Mountains are very snowy, and so it's very cold. And when I reread this yesterday, I was like, wow, there's actually, it's not just snow, it's much more miserable than that. It's like rain, a thunderstorm, snow, there's a lot of wind. And so even the shelter, the little shelter that the overhanging rock at the entrance of the cave provided is no use to them, and they're all soaking wet. Gandalf doesn't allow them to make a fire, which is kind of reminiscent of the little incident that we saw later on in The Lord of the Rings, where, you know, the hobbits make a fire to get some food on top of Weathertop, and that attracts the evil spirits, the ring wraiths. And so Gandalf here can still prevent them from not attracting any snow trolls. But the whole location, the whole situation, the description is actually much more miserable than what you see in the game in the Misty Mountains. So yes, I think that is actually what they were filming, and the actors must feel just as miserable as the elves felt or the dwarves felt in the story. So it probably will give them a lot of, you know, it'll help them a lot, kind of, you know, doing some method acting there and just becoming the dwarves.
It'll be a very authentic performance because they really are that miserable.
I can't imagine, you know, all the costumes and the fat suits and then, you know, the dwarves in the story only get to go through these experiences one time. These actors are doing these same scenes time and again and always like, let's do another take. And then, oh, well, someone forgot his lines. Let's do it another time. These three guys that want to go to New Zealand to be extras, I'm not sure if they know what they're in for.
Yeah, they might end up regretting it.
It's much less glorious than it seems if you're sitting in your comfortable chair in the movie theater eating your popcorn and it's hard work, and you can tell from the description of Peter Jackson. Now the other scene that he talks about is all fiery and it's all with, you know, it's a hot environment, and I was like, where could that be? Is that inside the Lonely Mountain? Is there another scene with lots of fire? It's been a while.
He didn't describe the setting, which is the one part that threw me off. It could be inside of Goblin Town or whatever, or it could be after they've escaped from the Misty Mountains when they're surrounded by the wargs and they're in the tree and the goblins decide to try and burn them. So,
oh, that could be it. Yes. Actually, I think that might be totally it. if they're trying to set fire, because he seemed to imply that it was a totally different scene from a different moment in the story. So
yeah, I think that's probably it. After all, the name of that chapter is Out of the Frying Pan and Into the Fire. So
there you go. Into the flame. That must be it. Wow, so they're really filming everything out of sequence.
I wonder how miserable he decided to make them in that scene. So they actually had to be, you know, in their full costumes out in the rain.
Gosh,
do you think they put them in a tree and then set the tree on fire?
Well, I'm pretty sure that they will use some stunt dwarfs for that, because you don't want to burn your main actors, especially not if you have still a couple of hundred days to go with the production. let's see if Peter Jackson...
You know, you want to get that authentic performance.
That is totally true. Let's see if we can squeeze out some more details from this interview. Well, provided that it plays.
So I take it some of it's on location, sort of out in the countryside, and some of it's against the green screen down in Miramar, is it?
Well, we're shooting on location. In about 2 or 3 weeks, we start our location sort of stint. We started shooting in March, and we have been filming in the studio, mainly because of the winter. You know, not only the bad weather, but you also get short days. Because when you're filming outside, you obviously want as much daylight as you can. And so normally we want to shoot for 12 hours, which is not possible during the winter.
You know, I never thought of that, but that is totally true. You want to make the most out of it every day, especially if you're out in the open and it's very expensive to film outside. You want to have the maximum amount of sunlight. Never considered that, but it's makes sense.
It gets, you know, dark early. So we've stuck out the winter shooting in the studio, and we're about to go on location in spring. It'll be nice.
So are The Hobbit's going to be some of the most expensive movies made?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
Is that because of the technical detail?
I mean, it certainly is a lot of money for two movies. I mean, individually, they're expensive, but not the most expensive films.
At the risk of asking you to pick between children, what's your favourite movie you've made?
My favourite movie I've ever made?
Mm.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's difficult. I never watch my movies. That's the problem. I literally never look at them after I finish them. Occasionally, if I'm somewhere in a hotel and I flick around the channels and I find one of my films on, I kind of watch it for 2 or 3 minutes just out of interest, and then all the memories start coming back and I kind of change the channel.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible, Dave. He never watches his own movies because it's just too painful. Wow.
I can imagine that.
Oh gosh, a poor man. I'm starting to feel for this man.
Yeah, he's really, you know, he's like Frodo. Peter Jackson left the Shire and sacrificed everything in order to bring something for the rest of us, but he can't enjoy it himself.
You're right. That is totally what it feels like. He didn't want to make. He didn't want to direct these movies. He knew how painful it was to do Lord of the Rings, and then almost immediately afterwards King Kong, which was also a very, you know, tough production. And now he's got to do The Hobbit, and it's so long and it's so difficult. Ah, man, I start to really admire this guy.
So I'm not, I don't know. I mean, I must admit I've got a real yearning to watch Meet the Feebles again. I haven't seen Meet the Feebles, which we made in about 1989. I haven't seen that, you know, almost for 15 years, I guess now, 15, 16 years. So I wouldn't mind seeing that again. I don't know if it's my favorite. I'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. Have you seen that one, Meet the Feebles? Meet the Feebles?
I have not.
Oh, I never heard that one. I've seen the scary movie that he did with Matthew, what's his name? The guy from Back to the Future.
Michael J. Fox.
Michael J. Fox. Yeah. And he did, that was called the... now I lost the title. I just recently...
Is it The Frighteners?
The Frighteners. I watched that on DVD. It's actually a very entertaining movie. But very much kind of like... It almost feels like a Spielberg movie. And I'm probably offending Peter Jackson terribly by saying that. But it feels like a movie from the early 90s, 80s. It kind of still got that same style. It's probably also because of Fox being in the movie. Has a Spielberg feel to it. But it's a great movie.
I'm past judgment later. Do you have a favorite movie of all time, that anyone's made?
Well, I like the original King Kong from 1933, and I like Buster Keaton's The General, made in 1927. Buster Keaton is absolutely a genius comic and director, and he was, you know, he was a comedian who was ahead of his time, and I've got an incredible soft spot for him.
All right. Well, I don't think that we have to go through the whole interview. Is there anything else worth mentioning from this interview?
There weren't too many details. I want to connect it to another story that I think was interesting. You know, he was talking about wanting to maximize the sun, you know, the daylight that they have for filming. And so during the winter, they tend to do more filming inside the studio because it gets dark so early. And so we have a story at the Waikato Times, it's actually the link. It's on the stuff.co.nz site that says that we're within the period when they have a permit to film near Matamata. But basically, apparently, the local residents are like have seen neither hide nor hair of the crew or the cast, and so basically, it's kind of an interesting article because it's an article about how there's no news. But basically, they were just going around interviewing people and saying like, "Hey, have you seen the Hobbit movie?" And everyone's like, "Nope, haven't seen him." So they do this fun little sort of story about how the folks in Matamata are like. Just like they have this fun game where they try to spot hobbits. They're like, wait, I think I see one. Nope, never mind.
Cool.
So anyway, they have a permit to be filming in Matamata now, and the story says that they have filming rights that last no more than 15 days before November 8th. So basically, people are kind of anticipating that they should be here soon because they're running out of time. But I wonder if maybe this is a red herring that they just decided not, you know, because it's.
Oh, interesting. You know. Interesting theory. Yeah, this might actually be just a way to keep the fans out because it's wide open. You know, you can get to Matamata and to the location from almost every side because there's no fence around this. It's enormous, so you can't fence it off. And so, yeah, you might be right. That's actually very, very smart. That could be a red herring. Or this could actually be the case, and, you know, they only have a limited time. And Peter Jackson in this interview says that they are about to go film outside. So, yeah, who knows? Interesting. I wonder if we can get in touch with any New Zealand, you know, people from the inside that can give us a little bit more information about that. Here's hoping. All right.
We'll have to talk to Jack. The New Zealand Noldor blogger.
We are definitely going to get him on the show soon now. Now that I'm done with all my traveling, so I have a little bit more time to actually produce the show, so I might get on top of that and see if I can get him on the show. Evangeline Lilly is in New Zealand, and she is playing this elf character. How's her elfish, actually?
I haven't actually listened to it, but we should see if we can play that for the folks.
Yeah, there's an article with some information about her first attempts to speak Elvish, and apparently there's also a clip, and so I'm trying to load that and see if we can... That would be cool. Oh, there you go. That's an interview. So this is not footage from the actual movie, but she's clearly, you know, getting ready to play her scenes, or she's probably already doing that. So, by the way, in another article, an interview, she seems to love the whole process. She really likes Peter Jackson. For her, it's a wonderful experience so far. So let's see if we can play this clip here. Oh well, of course we get a car commercial first. Your presentation will automatically resume shortly. And it's a Dutch ad.
I got an ad as well.
Here we go.
Total, like, sci-fi geek, I will admit it. Tell me about the Hobbit. So you're filming right now down in New Zealand, and did you fly here to do this?
I did. I got in the day before yesterday. I, myself, and my family are jet-lagged and having a wonderful time despite. We've been working out there for about a month now, and working with Pete Jackson is super inspiring, and the amount of support that they provide for actors as far as every single aspect of your acting. I have a dialect coach, I have a motion coach, I have a language coach, I have a stunt coach, so I should, by rights, be great in this film.
Okay.
But if I... It's my fault because there was so much support for me in New Zealand that I have no reason. No.
What's
excuse.
The dialect that you have to?
Well, I have to speak in RP, which is like a neutral English accent, and then I also have to speak Elvish.
Okay. Okay.
Which is another language, a complete other language.
Okay, do you want to give me a little Elvish?
Oh, okay. I could say Torohi. That means come now. I could say Lustisayam. And that means the cells are empty. And I won't give away any more because my Elvish really kind of will tell you what the story is. I can't tell you what the story is.
I know. Well, they're being, obviously, they want to keep it, you know, on the down low. So do you have, you know, you can't, certain scripts that they have to toss away or it has your name on it in case it gets out, like you did on Lost?
My scripts for this film got left in the production office when I came here. I was not bringing them with me. They were keeping them under lock and key, and they have a safe that they put them in.
Are you scared of the fans of this because they are such rabid fans?
I am scared. I am very scared. Be nice to me. Because my character is actually not in The Hobbit. My character is an invention of Peter Jackson and Fran Jackson, or Fran Walsh and Philippa Boyens. So either fans are going to love her or absolutely, you know, despise and be bitter towards her because she's not authentic. Yeah. Although I believe she is truly authentic because Tolkien refers to the Woodland Elves. He just doesn't talk about who they are specifically. And, I mean, all those people out there, the Jackson, you know, Jackson and Pete, Fran, and Phil, they know that world so well that they're not going to create a character that is not true to Tolkien's world.
Well, and I have a feeling that a lot of the fans that are fans of The Hobbits probably were fans of Lost, so just having you in it is enough for them. I don't think it matters, any of that stuff. I'm just guessing. I don't know.
There's ringers, and there's Losties, and they kind of cross over.
Yeah.
They're all the
ones
at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Right. Interesting interview. So
did you catch the bits of Elvish? Can you guess what part of the story she was describing?
Well, the cells are empty. That kind of gives it away, right? This is happening when the Hobbit, when Bilbo and the dwarves escape, I guess.
Well done, Father.
It's so, well, but we kind of already knew that, right? She was part of the Wood Elves, and but apparently her role. But could she be a warden of the prison, or?
So what it sounds like. The real interesting question is, maybe is she going to be the one who drinks too much and then gets drunk and falls asleep and loses the key? But it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like she's the one that discovers the cells and probably will yell at the guy that got drunk.
Right. She's probably some supervising elf or something like that. But she doesn't strike me as the right actor to play someone who gets totally, you know, wasted and somehow doesn't really fit the. But perhaps I'm just kind of typecasting her here. But it's interesting. But she seems to be extremely positive about her experience and having all the support and the. Gosh, a movement coach. What is that?
I don't even know.
I guess there must be a special way to move as an elf, like particularly gracefully. Or, now that I think of it, could this be like more a choreographer, that there is some fighting involved and that's a movement coach? Although, I don't know. Movement coach is not a fight coach, right?
Maybe. I don't think so, but maybe that's how she's referring to it. That's a good question. I'm not really sure what a movement coach would be. I'm imagining it's like the kind of guy that, you know, when you're just walking around the set, he pops out of nowhere and yells at you for walking incorrectly.
Right. You walk like a dwarf. yeah.
What did we talk about, Evangeline? Leave me alone.
We'll just stick a beard on you and put you among the dwarves here. Not working. Speaking of movement and the difference of movements, that's another thing that struck me while rereading The Hobbit, is that actually the dwarves, contrary of the kind of first impression, they seem to be pretty agile and seem to move along quite fast. And there's this scene where they're trying to escape from Goblin Town, and they're in the goblins are in hot pursuit, and Bilbo has a hard time, you know, keeping up there's this one what's his name, Bombur, or the slightly overweight dwarf who has trouble kind of keeping up. And so they have to carry Bilbo because he's not fast enough, and that surprised me because I always felt that the hobbits were really, really, you know, fast and good walkers and everything. But it turns out that the dwarves actually outrun Bilbo. And so I wonder how they're going to portray that, you know, the dwarves carrying Bilbo. Can you imagine that? I mean, we're not talking real dwarves and hobbits here, but the actors are full-grown human beings. Imagine if you are already in a fat suit, in dwarven clothes, and then you have to carry another actor on your back for days and days. My good, no wonder they're miserable.
Yeah, I don't. That doesn't sound like fun to me at all. It's not like the actual physical, you know, because dwarves, despite their diminutive stature, are still a little bit larger than hobbits.
Yes.
And they have, like, you know, strength that's out of proportion with their size.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, you just have full-grown adults,
exactly.
Adult human beings, dressed in costumes, trying to carry each other.
Oh, man. But anyway, I thought it was interesting. I totally forgot about that the dwarves were actually pretty good runners. And, you know, it kind of makes sense.
Well, you know, sense. There's the part in Lord of the Rings when Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli decide to pursue the orcs that have captured Merry and Pippin.
Mm-hmm.
And Gimli does just fine keeping up with Legolas and Aragorn.
True, despite
an elf and a man of Numenor. So.
Yeah, despite all his heavy chains, the equipment that he wears and his sword and everything, he seems to be doing totally fine. So they're pretty hardened. And you know, in a way... Bilbo is just a really kind of, he likes food. He likes just sitting on his porch, just smoking his pipe, and so he probably didn't do much running over there in the Shire. He might actually get a lot fitter and leaner later on in the story when he's done a lot of running. And then there's this other detail. Speaking of movements, that at one point the orcs, when they first start their pursuit, they make a lot of noise. And they yell, and they have this, they cry, and they make all sorts of weird sounds. And then at one point, they just change their tactics, and they choose their best runners. They put on these soft shoes or something like that, and then they almost become completely silent. And so the dwarves don't know exactly who are following them, and how many, and how close they are. And again, that's something that I have not seen in The Lord of the Rings. I think that most of the orcs that we see there are very noisy, and you can hear them coming and probably smell them from a big distance. But in this case, you've got these stealth orcs down there, down below in Goblin Town. And actually, as a side note, this is something that I recognized from the game, because at a certain levels you've got these very quickly running orcs, and I was always a little bit miffed by that. I was like, that is unnatural. Orcs don't move like that, and it's probably just made up by the producers of the game to, you know, make this level harder because you can't outrun those orcs. But now that I reread The Hobbit, it's like, well, wait a minute, this is actually just part of what Tolkien wrote. I love those little details.
Yep.
All right, let's go back to the news. What else have we heard from New Zealand?
There's some interviews with Orlando Bloom over at aceshowbiz.com.
Interesting. So did he give us any news about his role? Is he, you know?
Not really. It's more just like, you know, hey, what they all want to know is, like, how do you feel about playing the same character, but he has to be younger, but you're older. And, you know, and basically Orlando Bloom's like, you know, for starters, he's like, yeah, I'm Orlando Bloom, I have a baby face, I don't age. But, you know, he also mentions, you know, makeup and stuff like that. He does give an interesting tidbit. He says that he actually has the same wig that he had in the Lord of the Rings films, and even the same costume, and they both fit.
Uh-huh, interesting. So he's going to be totally the guy that we saw in The Lord of the Rings. I imagine his fans will be elated to hear that.
I can't believe they're making him wear the same wig. Couldn't make him a new wig or get him a new costume?
Well, I don't know. You want the character to be recognizable. And, you know, elves, they don't change much. I mean, it takes them a long time to age, so it kind of makes sense that he looks the same, if only to stress the fact that elves have a very different way of aging than humans have. So, yeah, cool.
That is true. I guess you're right. If they made him a new wig, no matter how good a job they did, those Tolkien fans would notice and be like, oh, that's not the same wig.
It's going to be the same.
He looks different. He shouldn't look
different. Yeah, it's going to be the Yoda discussion all over. Oh, Yoda looks totally wrong in the prequels. It's not our own beloved Yoda. They messed it up.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, actually, I think they should just not even put Orlando Bloom in. They should just CG him in.
I guess they can do that now. They could probably just use the stuff that they have from The Lord of the Rings and just make a CG character. But then we would probably, you know, be mad about that. Why can't they afford Orlando Bloom? and probably also that would probably result in a huge lawsuit from Orlando Bloom if they would use his likeness in The Hobbit without paying him.
Yeah.
Now, in the interview, I see that he's also talking about filming in 3D. And apparently he's already done another movie in 3D, The Musketeers. So he talks about the cameras, and they're using the Red cameras, the Epics, Red Epics. Those are brand new cameras. And those are very small cameras. And according to them, they're doing Steadicam with two cameras in 3D. I've never heard about Steadicam being done with two cameras. Like Steadicam, for those of you that are not familiar with the term, it is basically, it's a technique that they use quite a bit in The Lord of the Rings, actually. It requires a special cameraman, and he has the camera strapped to his body in a sort of a rig that dampens all the movement. So it enables a cameraman to move around. But the camera view itself, it will be a very fluid movement. But it requires very strong cameraman. Actually, I worked with Steadicam operators in the past. And usually these guys are extremely buff because they carry a lot of weight. Not just a camera, which is already very heavy. But then you've got the rig and everything. And then you have to move in a certain way. You always are, you know, thinking about the final image. So they usually have a digital monitor that they're constantly watching to make sure that their movement is totally fluid. But then you have to watch what happens. You have to choreograph the movement itself. If you want to have a great example of what you can do with Steadicam, think of any episode of ER. The camera in ER is constantly moving around, and it's almost a dance. But it's extremely arduous and straining for the cameraman because of all the weight, let alone if they film with two cameras. But apparently, you know, because of the fact that they use these Red cameras that are very small and yet can have this very high-quality image, they are able to pull this off. And so I think that visually, the movie, despite the fact that it's in 3D and 48 frames per second, it will have the same feel as a lot of the scenes in The Lord of the Rings, because they did a lot of Steadicam on The Lord of the Rings as well. So the camera is constantly moving, and it makes for a very dynamic image, which kind of helps you stay in the flow. You know, if they would film all this from the traditional, they have sometimes reels, and they put they put the camera on wheels, actually, but that usually results in it looks beautiful, but it's also very static. And if you put cameras on a tripod, it's nice, but it takes out the dynamic element from the filming. So glad to hear that you're using a Steadicam there. So, and good to hear from Orlando Bloom. It's very cool that he is back. Let's see, what else have we got in our show notes here?
I know there are thousands of fangirls out there who are just thrilled.
Yeah, I guess they didn't show up for Ian McKellen there. who also plays a younger version of himself, but he's done that before. You know, think of the X-Men, and he played a 30-year younger version of himself in the third X-Men movie. So they use a lot of CGI there, though, and this time it's just a little bit of makeup. So, now, what do I read here in the show notes? Did Ian McKellen buy a local pub? What's that?
Yeah, it's just a fun little story, and it's included because at the bottom, you know, anytime anyone interviews anybody involved in the Hobbit film about anything, they always have to ask about the Hobbit. So at the very bottom of the article, they ask him about the Hobbit. He mentions that he has a break at Christmas. He wasn't planning on coming home, but he is now because he purchased a local pub. And so he wants to come home and work on that, I guess. So he's a resident of Limehouse, and apparently he long had an ambition to own a little tea shop or a pub or something. So he and a theater director friend, Sean Matthias, and another gentleman took over a historic pub called The Grapes in Narrow Street.
Wow.
And I think they knew folks involved in it. They grew up with it and they loved it. And I don't know. I'm trying to figure out. I don't know if it was in trouble or something, but they wanted to buy it to make sure that they could, you know, that it would last and they could take care of it and stuff. So that's pretty cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And he's got enough money to do that.
Yep. So they're changing the color scheme. They overhauled the menu. Sounds like.
Hmm.
He mentioned something about the chef bringing in some shepherd's pie for him to
nice,
taste.
Nice, nice, nice.
Apparently, Ian McKellen's a vegetarian. I think.
Oh,
he
really?
He hasn't eaten meat for almost 30 years, but the shepherd's pie almost has converted him.
That's pretty cool. The dwarves are back on the cover of a magazine, I see. And these seem to be new photos, although the costumes haven't changed. There's this magazine called Premiere, and it's a Spanish magazine as far as I can tell. But what struck me when I looked at it, and I don't know if this is done by the editors of the magazine, but look at the colors of the clothes of the dwarves. There is much more color in there than in previous photos that we've seen, where most of all their clothes look very drab. But these two dwarves, and I really don't know who these are. I forgot. Perhaps you can enlighten me. But one has very distinct, beautiful blue robes, and the other one has a very, you know, beautiful dark red color. And so I like that, because we know from the descriptions in Tolkien's Hobbit that the colors are very, you know, important for the dwarves. That's how you kind of tell them apart. And we always speculate, you know, will they get rid of the colors or not? But it seems, at least based on this photo, unless it's photoshopped just for the sake of the cover, looks to me like the colors are back, and it looks pretty cool.
I have a sneaking suspicion, Father, that they might have touched it up a bit for that cover.
Well,
but,
yeah, they
but
can.
Actually, we had this conversation when they first released the photos. We mentioned that even though they're, you know, the descriptions of their cloaks, mm-hmm. their colorful cloaks in the book are kind of silly. You know, the colors almost sound like they're pastels. And we were talking about how much more sort of realistic and gritty and serious and dark the costumes look, but that they had still kept the colors. Everybody had a slightly different overall color palette
right.
to their costume. And so I think they will be colorful. I don't think it'll be quite as vivid on screen, especially with the different lighting conditions, and they're probably going to get grimy.
True.
You know, it's hard to imagine it being too vivid when they're soaked from the rainstorm. But I think each dwarf's still going to have sort of his own distinctive color palette, so it's easier for us to tell them apart. And just so you know, the guy in the blue cloak on the front is Thorin Oakenshield.
Oh, of course, yes. Well, I got to do more homework on the names of the dwarves. I'm starting to recognize them now when I reread The Hobbit. It's like, yeah, Fili Kili, yeah, the youngest dwarves. I probably can, but there are 13 to remember. Oh, Lord. I remember being, when I was in Australia, I was at a conference, and they had this pretty fancy dinner with lots of guests from the world of media. And I was sitting next to the first winner of the Australian MasterChef. And she was actually a Catholic. And so this was a Catholic conference. And so she gave a talk about her experiences on MasterChef. But she also brought her parish pastor, the parish priest, a little tiny guy. Actually, he looked kind of size-wise, definitely more hobbit-sized. But that guy was just an over-the-top Tolkien fan, and just kept talking throughout the meal about The Hobbit, about Tolkien, and it's just one of those obnoxious fans, not the kind of modest intellectual ones, but he might actually be listening to this podcast. No, he was a great guy. He was really nice. But then he started to interrogate us, because I was like, oh yeah, I love The Hobbit, and, you know, I'm thinking of doing a podcast about The Hobbit. This is like 2 years ago. But I was already making plans for this show. And so he was like, well, are you up for it? And he wanted me to give all the names of the dwarves. and I didn't know any of the names at that time. And but it was basically a rhetorical question, because he started to name all the dwarfs at high speed, and then he did another time even faster. And I was like, oh, thank God for dessert.
Put some food in his mouth.
He made me feel really, really bad. I was like, oh, I don't know anything about the Hobbit. Anyway, so there are more priests interested in the Hobbit. That was the point that I was trying to make. And if you're listening to this, that was just a great conversation that we had there during that meal. Let's move on. let's take a short break here, because we've been talking quite a bit. Let me play a jingle, do a little commercial break, and then we'll go to the fandom news. Because, of course, The Hobbit is not just about the production in New Zealand, but it's also about the wonderful world of Tolkien fans.
What's happening out there?
Shall I describe it to you? Or would you like me to find you a box?
This show is brought to you by our good friends of Bluehost. Bluehost is a hosting service, but a very affordable one that gives you a lot of bang for your buck, as they say. If you go over to our website, thehobbit.sqpn.com, or to the main website of the StarQuest Production Network, sqpn.com, you'll see that Bluehost banner. And for just $6.95, you can have your own .com domain name. They actually give you a .com domain name for free for that price. And they give you unlimited space, unlimited bandwidth, and one-click installations of popular software packages like WordPress. So you can have your own WordPress blog, and it's just a matter of a few clicks of the mouse. And for just $6.95 per month, it's a really good deal. I use it myself for my personal website, and I highly recommend it. It's very user-friendly, and again, it's just great value for money, and I'm glad that they are sponsors of this show.
There and Back Again, A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. This is wonderful.
I meant to go back, wander the paths of Mirkwood, visit Lake Town, see the Lonely Mountain again. But age, it seems, has finally caught up with me.
So we travel to the wonderful world of Tolkien fans, and you being the program director of Middle-earth Radio, what's going on there? Any news on that great website and radio?
Absolutely. Well, the most exciting thing that I meant to mention last time we did a show, and I can get around to it on Hobbit Day, was that right around Hobbit Day, we actually launched our new website, which they had been laboring over, slaving away over for several months, I think. Our other site was just riddled with bugs, and the software wasn't getting. The software framework we were using had been basically deprecated and wasn't being supported anymore, and so it was kind of devolving. So we got a new webmaster, a gentleman named Tom Miller, who's just fantastic and quite adept at WordPress and BuddyPress and stuff like that. And he's put together a new social network framework for us. And so
nice.
I would highly encourage Tolkien fans who are listening to go to mymiddle-earth.net. And it's a beautiful site, because we have a partnership with a bunch of, some of the more famous Tolkien artists like Ted Naismith and Jeff Murray. And so the site is just covered in their artwork. So it's quite gorgeous.
It is definitely gorgeous. And what a huge difference with the previous site. This looks clean. It's beautifully designed, and as you mentioned, it is fantastic to see all that that artwork. I love it. It is highly recommended. And of course, this is not just a regular blog. This is also a community, and so you can sign up and become part of that community and participate in the discussions. And then, of course, there's the radio part of this. Now, you guys did a fantastic job on Hobbit Day. Just give us a recap of how the Middle Earth Network celebrated that day.
Oh, it was fun. We did an extended live broadcast, kind of like you've done before.
Mm-hmm.
Where we just stayed on the radio for hours. I'll be honest. I was the weak link. because I had my day job, so I wasn't able to be on as long as the other folks were. Although when they, since they're all on Central Eastern Time, they quit a little early, and I stayed on for another hour and a half and took over the radio station by myself with a friend.
Nice.
But yeah, we did an extended live broadcast. We had some interviews. We had some special guests. We broadcast, rebroadcast the special episode of Secrets of the Hobbit. So it was great. It was a great celebration.
Fantastic. I love it how, you know, the especially Tolkien fans seem to celebrate all these special occasions like the double birthday of Bilbo and Frodo. And, you know, if you go to some websites, you can even see, you know, what happened today in Middle Earth, you know, on this date. It is lovely. It's really, really cool. And the more I read Tolkien's work, the more I appreciate that kind of nerdy, geeky stuff. It is, it's just a great, great kind of place to dwell in virtually. Any other news? We're wrapping up the show. Our jingle is playing in the background, but we still have about 2 minutes for anything else. Okay. You want to mention?
Just, you know, I would just do the quick thing about the spring 2012 Mythgard courses, because I think our listeners might be interested in those. So, as you know, Mythgard is the online Tolkien Studies Institute that Corey Olson, the Tolkien professor, has founded, and that Middle Earth Network is a partner of. And so anyway, he just announced the spring 2012 courses. There's actually two this time around. One is on Tolkien and Lewis that Corey is teaching, and the other one is a Harry Potter class being taught by the three Potter pundits.
Very cool. I know a lot of people that are interested in that. And again, this is not just fan stuff. This is serious academic discussion sometimes. I mean, this is you can learn a lot. And at the same time, it's not the boring, dusty stuff from the, you know, old libraries. But this is, you know, it's what we're passionate about. So it's an ideal combination. Where can people go to find more information about that?
Go to mythgard.org. That's mythgard.org. So, and they're cool classes. I'll warn you, if you take it for credit, it is a lot of work. I was taking the Tolkien and the Epic class this fall, and I had to drop to auditing because I didn't have time. So, but yeah, go check that out. And there's going to be more exciting classes in the summer and stuff. So, and otherwise, go to news.mymiddle-earth.net just for a bunch of other interesting fandom-related news.
Very nice. Well, I want to use the final minute of our show to mention our sister show called The Secrets of Middle-Earth. We've recorded a new episode, which is all about the astronomy of Tolkien, and really enjoyed doing the research about that. It's a whole new dimension of the world that Tolkien created. Very interesting stuff. And we are about to enter the Mines of Moria in our next two or three episodes, and we're currently doing all the preparation. There is just so much to tell about these Mines of Moria. And of course, as you know, that show is recorded inside Middle-earth, well, inside the game. It's a lot of fun to produce. We get more and more listeners to that show. And go check it out. It's middleearth.sqpn.com. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you soon on another episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.